Good morning. It is Thursday, and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan, and you are always invited to be part of the proceedings at 414-1234, or long distance between you and us. It's 800-926-8809. If you would care to email the program, it's perspectives@wfsu.org, or you can send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. Given the fact that we are talking about a very significant piece of music on today's Perspectives and what it means to the community, both in Tallahassee and beyond our geography, wanted to open the program with a little sample of Berti's Requiem. The opening bars of Berti's Requiem, and the reason we're playing that on Perspectives this morning is because on March 25th at Florida State University's Ruby Diamond Concert Hall, the Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra and the Florida A&M University Choir, in partnership with the Holocaust Education Resource Council and Temple Israel, will present the Requiem of Resistance. Now, this concert tells the story of the historic performances of Berti's Requiem at Terezin through narration, images, and a performance of the Requiem in its entirety. And this morning on Perspectives, a preview of that event and a discussion of its significance to our community and to all people. So we welcome to these microphones Executive Director of the Holocaust Education Resource Council, Barbara Goldstein. It is so good to see you, Barbara. Thanks for coming.
Glad to be back.
We also have Rabbi of Temple Israel, Jack Romberg. Welcome back, Rabbi.
Thanks, Tom. Good to see you. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, too. And director of the Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra, Mandy Stringer. And thank you, Mandy.
Good morning, Tom.
Well, you will not be directing this particular performance,
no,
but we know someone who is, right?
Yes. Our esteemed conductor, Darko Budaritz, will be at the helm of the performance.
Let's ask, where did this incredible thing come from? How did this performance of Verdi's Requiem in Terezin come to Tallahassee?
Well, about maybe 2 years ago almost, Barbara Goldstein and Marjorie Turnbull asked me to meet them for lunch. And so we went out to lunch, and they told me about this incredible presentation. They each saw different versions of the presentation. One was in Gainesville, and Barbara, I think you saw the one in New York. They said, we need to tell this story of how spiritual resistance was done by the Jewish musician prisoners of Terezin using Verdi's Requiem Mass. And initially, we thought that we could actually use the School of Music and have them work with a foundation, the Defiant Requiem Foundation, that does a formal presentation. And that didn't come to be. So we thought about it. I, at that time, was treasurer of the Tallahassee Symphony. And Barbara and I spoke a little bit, and we said, let's go to Mandy and Darko and see if maybe they would be interested in this. And I have to say how thrilled and proud I am of Mandy and Darko, because they just didn't see it as something that would be, okay, a nice concert night, but really embraced the whole message of what we were trying to do. And the rest, as they say, is history. Mandy and Darko have worked so darn hard. Mandy had the idea of bringing in Mark Butler from FAMU to direct the choir, and there we go. We're off and running.
Okay, now this is, for those not familiar with the actual story which you referenced, Rabbi Jack, what happened in January of 1942 at this camp, and a Nazi concentration camp in Terezin. What happened there? How did a Catholic Requiem Mass piece of music be used by a predominantly Jewish camp population as a mark of resistance to what was going on in the camp?
Because if you know anything about this concentration camp, it was total. The musicians were sent there. Artists were sent there. Very, very intellectual people. It was a camp that was set up for artistic people. So the musicians were already there in place, and the music was the score was snuck in there, and they were rehearsing this, and it was their voice when they had no voice. So there were so many forms of resistance during the Holocaust. I mean, if they could survive one day, if they could get food, if they could live, if they could play music, if they could do artwork. So this just gave them more inspiration. And then, it was just such a compelling story and inspiration, because the way they were able to rehearse this in a dark cellar, just to survive, to try and play. But after they played, they were just shipped off on the trains and then didn't make it.
I can add a little bit to that too, Tom.
Sure,
so
ma'am.
There was a pianist named Ronald Schachter who was also a conductor, and he was the one that smuggled a single score of the Requiem into the camp. What I've read is that they rehearsed, as Barbara mentioned, in a basement, but they had only a sawed-off piano. You have to imagine that it was completely out of tune, had keys missing, was in the worst shape. And this is a huge, monumental piece of music. It's 90 minutes long. And so with a single score, he was able to teach the prisoners this by rote. And it's in Latin, so you have to think of that as a barrier as well. So it's so powerful to think about the determination that it took for them to learn and perform this piece of music. It's just incredible.
Okay, Jack.
And there were members of the leadership council at Terezin, Jewish leaders, including some rabbis, who objected to the idea of Jewish prisoners performing a Catholic Mass. But for those who were participating in learning this and eventually performing it, it was a way for them to say to the Nazis in Latin what they couldn't say in German or any other language, to express their feeling about what was happening.
And we think in terms of a requiem, again, the old Catholicism coming out here, that it is the acceptance of the inevitable. The beloved has passed on, and this is a sort of somber celebration of a life once lived. This conveyed a very different message, though, didn't it?
Absolutely. It conveyed a very, very different message. And when we do the presentation on March 25th, we're really looking to show how music and how grasping music, and it does not matter where the origin of the music is, can raise your spirit and actually raise your hope. I think that's just such a key element.
And this is not just an isolated situation. This is going to be part of a larger entity called Holocaust Education Week, which is actually March 19th through March 27th. Thank you, Barbara, for all this. What are some of the other things that are going on surrounding this particular event?
We're going to have a performance on Monday, March 20th at Westminster Oaks called Quartet for the End of Time, and this was also played at in a concentration camp. We're going to be showing the film The Defiant Requiem, and this is about the story of the Requiem. And we'll have other educational events throughout the year. And to go see this, you can go to our website. And all of the events are free except for the symphony on Saturday night.
Okay. As a piece of music, and we're going to hear some other segments of Verdi's Requiem throughout the program here today, but as you said, Mandy Stringer, this is a ferociously powerful and expansive kind of score. I can't imagine this with an out-of-tune piano and non-professional singers. How could these people have pulled this thing off?
It has to be sheer determination and great spirit. It's most people know Verdi as an opera composer. That's what he was known for. And this is basically an opera oratorio. It's very operatic. It's very demanding on the voices. The choir will be huge. So we've had to, in addition to using the FAMU choir, have gathered many community members. And I'd like to publicly thank Melissa Brewer, our personnel manager, because she's really the one that did all the recruiting on that end. And she recruited 70 more singers. So it's going to be a huge chorus of people. And to think that the Jewish prisoners were pulling this off at this time where they were watching their loved ones be shipped off daily and people dying. It's just an incredible story.
We'll be back and hear another segment from Verdi's Requiem being performed on the stage of the Ruby Diamond Concert Hall on the 25th of this month, and more of that to come right here on WFSU's Perspectives. 414-1234 is the number, 800-926-8809, or drop us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. A segment of Berti's Requiem of Resistance, to be performed in Tallahassee by the Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra and the choir from Florida A&M University, March 25th at Ruby Diamond Concert Hall. And that's what we're talking about here and its significance to our community here on Perspectives this morning. And That's the part of the Requiem, Mandy Stringer, that everybody remembers. That's the one that just hits you in the face and will not let go of your head. It's incredible.
This movement, the Dies Irae, which means Day of Wrath, the day that will dissolve the world in ashes, is the one that is most popularly used. I think everybody has heard it on a commercial at some point in their life. But that is Verdi at his finest operatic writing. It is so dramatic and it is so powerful. And in the context of our project, it became a hidden message for the prisoners to their captors that the day of wrath will come upon you.
Well, and what a powerful lead-in that is for someone else who's joining us here by telephone, former Tallahassee lawmaker, current Economic Club of Florida president, member of multiple organizational boards, including the Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra, Marjorie Turnbull. Marjorie, thank you for joining us today.
Well, Tom, thank you, and thank you for WFSU for having this program. And thank you to the TSO and Temple Israel and Herc and the FAMU Choir for partnering in what really is going to be a monumental performance. A number of years ago, I visited Tiretson and came away with just a sense of horror and asking over and over the question, how could this have happened? And, you know, we pride ourselves in thinking it couldn't happen here. And yet, the Holocaust didn't start all at once. It started with small steps in Germany when individuals ignored and denied and turned away from the slurs against the Jews. We're so lucky that it's a caring and tolerant community, and yet we are seeing prejudice raising its ugly head here against the Jews, or the desecration of the cemetery, and the Muslims, and Mexican migrants, and African Americans, anyone who might be regarded as different, whether it's with color or race or religion. And this Requiem performance is to remind us that we are each and everyone responsible and guilty if we do nothing when we hear or see someone slurred. And I do want to add, though, that the Requiem is more than a statement of defiance. It's also a statement of hope, and that under the most dire circumstances, the human spirit can prevail and overcome evil. And I just urge people to attend the Requiem and learn and experience through music a better understanding of how we can come together and eliminate intolerance in Tallahassee.
Thank you, Marjorie. And Rabbi Jack, that was a very on-point commentary that perhaps our lesser angels, all of us, must realize that we have them. And given any number of circumstances, they can emerge and take over our relationships with other people and, in fact, our entire lives if we're not ever careful and vigilant, right?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, sometimes people's worst instincts start to take control. Barbara and I both are children of survivors, and we both have piles of stories in terms of things that happened to our families. And Marjorie talked about how it starts with small acts. And my great uncle, Richard Stern, who raised my father, it started with the boycott of Jewish businesses on April 1st, 1933. And he stood in the doorway of his store wearing his Iron Cross that he won for valor in World War I, handing out pamphlets in protest against Hitler and his regime. And he was arrested and taken to police headquarters. And fortunately, he was let go. But things just multiplied from that beginning to a tremendous end. But there's another piece of the story. The other piece of the story is, why was he let go from the police station? Because a lot of people in Cologne knew him, and he was a popular moderator for events at the carnival that happens every year. And the police captain said, Richard, we're letting you go. Now, here in Tallahassee, we have had already some tremendous outpouring of love from the community to the Jewish community. For instance, just last week, in the wake of a number of the cemetery desecrations going on around the country, Temple Israel, Shomrei Torah, Hillel at FSU and Chabad all received vases of roses and a beautiful letter from the Muslim Student Associations of FAMU and FSU stating that they stood with us and that they were here for us if anything were to happen to the Jewish community. They wanted to express their solidarity. I've received emails and phone calls in the last couple of days from the pastors, like Brant Copeland at First Pres and Dave Colleen at St. John's, all calling and saying to me, you understand that our communities are there for the Jewish community. So we live in this beautiful community with people who are willing to stand with us. And that's the other piece of the story.
I recall something that happened, and Barbara, you saw this, the small town in West Texas in which the mosque was torched, and the Christian and the Jewish communities had an outpouring of support for that congregation as well. And so the fact that we seem to be seeing a resurgence in hate-type crimes does not necessarily mean that there's not a lot of good out there as well.
That's right. That's right, because people are still helping people, and people are still realizing that we're more alike than we're more different. And we just have to keep educating everybody. I think that's the bottom line, because where is it starting? Why is it starting? It's not starting. Why is it not stopping?
And it behooves all of us to make sure that we include in our circle of friends maybe a broader circle than perhaps we might. How many of us really know someone who is Muslim or Jewish or Episcopalian or whatever? And now we see in the political realm where we have balkanized into little groups as well. Yeah, we have a very divided situation here. But how many folks have unfriended someone on Facebook because of their political views? But it's the same person maybe they went to elementary school with or that they work with. Those relationships haven't changed. But do we have to keep on guard? All of us, I think, be vigilant against, again, our darker angels in there.
I think it's communication. It's getting to know each other better. It's getting to like each other better and hopefully keeping that direction going and not the word hate. I mean, I heard a Holocaust survivor speak a few years ago, and he says the one word that needs to be taken out of the dictionary is hate.
How do you remove that? It just seems like such a hardwired
part of us. It's under the surface. And why are we letting it come out more and more? And if we don't stand up, it's going to happen.
Okay. Rabbi Jack, go ahead.
So I think that, Barbara's touched on something important. How do we get rid of this? And I think that there's two elements that are very, very key. One element is the tremendous work of HERC, which is education and educating people on what happened and then how do we translate that into lessons for today. Part two is creating relationships, is reaching across to each other, connecting in ways to each other that maybe we were afraid to before, getting to know each other, getting people out of their little bubbles, be they political bubbles or religious bubbles or racial bubbles, whatever bubble you happen to be sitting in, be willing to get out of that bubble and reach across and connect with somebody who's different from you. Connect with somebody who is unlike you. And the more that we can do that, the more we can break down the barrier that creates hatred, the things that create hatred. So I think it's that combination of education and relationships.
We live in a political town, and Marjorie Turnbull, if anyone knows how to build bridges when it comes to differing political viewpoints, you would probably know something about that. As we head into what's likely to be a contentious legislative session here, how do we ramp that down? Any ideas or suggestions? Is Marjorie still on the line, guys? Okay, she dropped off. We hope to reestablish contact with her at some point to get some helpful hints on how exactly do you do that in a hyper-politicized atmosphere like we have here in Tallahassee. But let's take another quick time out to hear another segment from Verdi's Requiem, which again will be performed on the stage of Ruby Diamond Concert Hall on March the 25th, a joint production of the Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra and the Florida A&M University Concert Choir, along with the Holocaust Education Resource Council, Temple Israel, and many other supporters from our community here in Florida's capital city. Let's hear that piece now. An excerpt from Verdi's Requiem, which will be performed in Tallahassee on the 25th of this month, Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra and the Florida A&M University Concert Choir and Mandy Stringer. Tickets available now?
They are available on our website, www.tallahasseesymphony.org.
What other elements will there be in the performance besides the complete performance of Verdi's Requiem?
So the performance will begin with a script, a narration that Jack Romberg has written. Thank you, Jack, that I've read. It's lovely, and it includes basically information about the historical performances and also some poems read by prisoners at Trazon. And there are visuals, and also Laura Johnson will be joining Jack as they read the narration. And Jack can speak a little bit more specifically about the pre-performance aspects.
Yes. Well, first of all, I have to give a shout out to Laura Johnson and thank her for the tremendous work she's done in finding images from looking at the script, from editing the script. I mean, just really putting a lot of work into this with me. Laura, of course, is a wonderful narrator, wonderful actress. And we will tell the story of the camp itself and then how the musical performances fit in. There were other musical performances that we'll talk about as well. But really the centerpiece of the spoken pieces of the evening are the poems from prisoners written by prisoners of Trazon. We found a book that contains their words, their poetry that describes different aspects of the camp, including the musical performances. And so we will be reading their work and giving their name and the prisoner number that was tattooed on their forearm.
And the final performance of this, as I understand it, was a performance of liberation. This was after the Nazis had been vanquished and the Red Cross moved into the camp.
No, the final performance was actually a propaganda performance. The Nazis set it up as essentially propaganda. They were still controlling the camp. The Red Cross had come into the camp to inspect, and what the Nazis did was put on a show, having this performed to show, gee, that we're not treating the Jews so bad after all.
And another interesting part of that is that over the course of a couple of years, there were, 15 to 18 performances of the Requiem. Mm-hmm. And the first time they performed it, the choir was as large as it would ever be, I think at around 80, and what I've read is over time as they were deported off to different death camps. that the choir diminished to around 30 or 40 members. And so that was the final performance that the Red Cross heard.
The Red Cross. Marjorie Turnbull has returned to join us here via telephone. And Marjorie, thank you so much for calling back in. Again, as an old Tallahassee hand, as we get into this legislative session and beyond, how can people kind of bring their political instincts perhaps a bit more under control, since everyone is on the side of righteousness, right?
Well, Tom, and by the way, Tom, I was still listening. I just turned off the phone, but if I knew the answer to that, I'd be an oracle. I think so many in elective office, not all, but have lost sight of the real goal and purpose of serving in elective office, and that is really to make life better for everyone, that they don't represent just one segment of the population. They represent everyone in their district. But it starts with the voter, just like what we're talking about here in facing prejudice and intolerance starts with each one of us. It starts with the voter, and when the voters start saying, no, we don't want people representing us who have such intolerance and such ideological base that they can't see a broader purpose, then we'll see things change.
Good advice as we head into what could be a rather, I don't want to say entertaining, that might diminish the final outcome a bit much, but certainly a contentious legislative session that kicks off this coming Tuesday. And we want to hear from you on our program here on Perspectives as we talk about the upcoming performance of Berardi's Requiem of Resistance, March 25th on Ruby Diamond Concert Hall stage. 414-1234, a local number, 800-926-8809, long distance, or perspectives at WFSU.org. We'll be right back. Reminder that you are listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM, and we are hearing bits and snatches of Verdi's Requiem, which is part of the Requiem of Resistance performance at Ruby Diamond Concert Hall on the 25th of this month. And from the Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra, the Mandy Stringer, not just an ensemble performance, lots of soloists get a chance to strut their stuff in the course of this, too.
That is exactly right, and that was a good example of that. So Verdi, as I have mentioned previously in the show, wrote this really in an operatic style, and so he includes four soloists, a bass, tenor, soprano, and alto, typical conglomeration of voices in a performance like that, and it's that we've hired four soloists that are coming from out of town. They're all stellar performers, and it will be a real treat to get to hear their musicianship and what they bring to the performance. I've tried to, with two of them actually, I'm still not spoken to them personally. I'm dealing with their agents, and I keep stressing to the agents, you need to make sure that the soloists know exactly what they're getting into here, because I'm a little concerned they'll show up concert week and think it's just a regular performance of Verdi's Requiem, and then they're going to be just struck by how emotionally involved they will be in the performance, and that can be difficult when you're on stage trying to perform. So I'm doing my best to get the word to them so they understand the magnitude of the project.
I think Maestro Butterock will probably put a little bug in their ear on this one, too.
We hope so, yes.
Yeah. It still is an outpouring of an entire community gathering. Just organizing this, guys, must have been incredible. Marjorie Turnbull, let me throw that to you, since I'm sure you made a whole bunch of calls in connection with this. How difficult was it to amass the kind of support that's needed to put this together?
Well, listen, I played a very small role in this. The three people that are sitting there with you are the ones who carried the load. But no, it's been amazing, the outpouring of support, and from all faiths, and all groups, that anybody we have approached has understood immediately the importance of this message.
And this is part of a larger whole. Again, if you're just joining us, Barbara Goldstein with the Holocaust Education Resource Council. Holocaust Education Week is that entire March 19th through the 27th. And this concert sits right smack dab in the middle of that. But you're doing all kinds of things with HERC during that entire period.
My idea was that I didn't want people to come and just come to one night. I wanted them to learn more than they ever would have learned with having more events and more programs. So this whole week got developed and it started growing in different ways. So, of course, we have on Sunday the 19th, Darko the conductor is going to be doing a reception. And then on Monday, Mandy will talk about the other performance at Westminster. And then we have an out-of-town guest called Dr. Tamara Friedman, and she's a Holocaust ethnomusicologist. Now, I can't even say it, but she's just amazing at how much she knows about this Holocaust music that she'll be presenting. And then at the film on Thursday, the 23rd, she'll be doing a Q&A of the Defiant Requiem film. And then we're also going to have some other interesting parts of our week, Education Week. The Museum of Fine Arts is also going to be part of this at FSU. And there's going to be a presenter named Darcy Foreman. And Darcy is going to be presenting to the community about Holocaust exhibition experiences. And she created Daniel's Story exhibit at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. And that'll be an open, free presentation on Sunday. And then on Monday, March 27th, she's given a workshop to the museum study students at FSU. So this has been a lot of work, but it came all together. And I want to add that the whole community just needs to share this and come, because it'll be a great experience for the whole week. And you want to add to anything, Mandy, on that?
Yeah, I just want to make folks aware of a second music performance that's happening that week. Monday, as Barbara mentioned, at Westminster Oaks, there's a free performance of Olivier Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time, which in and of itself is a very interesting story. Messiaen was 31 when he wrote it. He was a French composer. And he was in the French army during World War II and was captured by the Germans. And when he went to the POW camp, he was a pianist and composer, was in the camp with some other stellar musicians and wrote a quartet for an unorthodox combination of instruments. So cello, violin, piano, yes, you think those three. But the added instrument here is clarinet. And you can tell from the title, Quartet for the End of Time, it's a profound and moving work. We have four musicians from the FSU College of Music that will be performing it that a lot of the listeners will be familiar with. We have Reed Gainsford on piano, Greg Sauer on cello, Ben Sung is the violinist, and John Holden is the clarinetist. And that's a free performance at Westminster Oaks. And I will encourage people to also attend that. It is just an incredible, incredible piece of music.
Yeah, reminder, too, that with the exception of the 25th concert at Ruby Diamond, all of this is free. People just walk in and enjoy. And HolocaustResources.org, Holocaust Resources being all one word, .org, is where you go. You're just catching this now and going, my gosh, that sounds like a lot of stuff going on. How do I find out the comprehensive listing? You said something, Rabbi, a little bit ago that I thought was just powerfully profound. And it was how one inmate in a camp situation was spared because of a personal relationship with the principals at the camp. That when you have a one-on-one connection with another human being, it becomes very, very difficult, certainly to kill them, but also to hate them.
Well, it wasn't in the camp. It was what I related was the relationship of my great uncle after he was arrested for the protest that he did of the boycott of Jewish businesses in 1933, that he was known in the community. And when he got to the police station, the Nazi troopers took him to the police station. The captain on duty knew him, and after the Nazis left, they said to him, "Richard, as far as we're concerned, you were never here," and they let him go.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks to the power of relationship. By the way, I've done a lot of research on our family. We discovered a whole end of our family that we never knew existed in 2011, 2012. And I went and interviewed a number of them in 2013. And the stories of how relationship can actually change things, very amazing and very powerful. One of what would be my dad's first cousins that he never lived to meet, but I met, told me the story of how his father was warned by actually a member of the SS who served with him in World War I to abandon his place, that Kristallnacht was coming in 1938. And because of that, he lived and he was spared and he was able to get his family to Cuba and eventually to America, but all because of a relationship that he had formed with this person as a soldier together in World War I.
And when it comes to that kind of connection, Marjorie Turnbull, you remember these stories at a similarly, shall we say, tumultuous time in the Florida legislature when you had a Republican by the name of King, you had a Democrat by the name of Silver, and they would howl and excoriate each other on the floor of their chambers, but then after 5 o'clock, they'd go out and have a quiet drink together, and they seem to be almost best friends. Have we lost some of that?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah, because it's become so partisan.
And how do we overcome that? Again, you said if you had that secret, you could probably make a latter-day fortune. But are there any baby steps that we can take as individuals to maybe ramp that kind of animosity and that vitriol down?
Well, it would have to be done by the members of the legislature working together. But as I say, I go back to voter responsibility and electing people that they know are going to be able to be collegial and work together and not be divisive.
So if someone comes up to you and says that I will refuse to work with the other side, maybe you had best avoid that person as a potential candidate for office?
Exactly.
Don't hear too much of that nowadays, sadly. Let's have, as we get ready to take this program out on literally a high note, Taylor, if we could cue up track number 5 here in Verdi's Requiem, one of the more, shall we say, triumphant passages from this magnificent work. And let's hear that right now.
Thank you.
Rabbi Jack, what could you say about that, huh?
Well, that's the Sanctus segment. And one of the things we're doing on March 25th one part we want to show is the connection between some excerpts of Catholic liturgy that are represented in the Requiem and their connection to parallel pieces of Jewish liturgy. So there is, of course, this movement of sanctification, and we will share a little excerpt from the Hebrew version of sanctification, which centers around a quote from Isaiah chapter 6, Kadosh, 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 Adonai Tzevaot Melochol Haaretz Kevodo, which means, holy, holy, holy is the God of hosts. The whole world is filled with God's glory. And if I were to say a theme for the evening, what we really want people to understand is that in the end, despite oppression, something like the story of the prisoners of Terezin and their spiritual resistance is an illustration of how God's glory does fill the entire earth. All we have to do is tap into it. And sometimes our method of tapping into it is not what our tradition would normally tell us, but finding somebody else's words to help us feel it.
And the amazing thing that that connection is word for word in both traditions.
That's exactly right.
Which is, how does that happen?
Old Testament.
It's called the Old Testament. Yeah, we share a piece of Bible. I mean, so much of what happens in Christianity is based on Hebrew Bible. And just developed in a slightly different direction, but we share roots and we share commonality. We sometimes let the different directions that the two religions took in terms of practices and certain ideals that we center upon, we sometimes let that distract us from core pieces that unite us. And that's a key element of the evening. There will be another example, which I won't give away right now, of a connection between Catholic liturgy and Jewish liturgy.
And also we will bring in that Islam is also a faith of the book, and so there's that connection as well. And with just a few moments remaining here, let's go around the table real quick. Again, Barbara Goldstein, any final thoughts here as we head towards this Holocaust Education Week, including this incredible concert that's coming up?
Just want everybody to share it on Facebook. I'm going to share, tell it just like the other people here. I'm saying for everybody here, get your tickets, go to the website and get tickets. And I just want to give a big recognition to all the great teachers that are doing for Holocaust education. I think that's really what it comes down to, because we got to help the students understand that this is really important, how to treat people with respect.
And again, that website is holocaustresources.org and the TSO website for the tickets. Mandy.
So to purchase tickets on our website, it's TallahasseeSymphony.org, or you can call the office at 224-0461 and speak to either Mary or Matt, and they can set you up with tickets. Final thoughts on my part are I'd like to really extend thanks to Barbara and Jack and Marjorie and so many others that had a huge hand in making this happen. I'm so honored that the symphony gets to be a part of it. And just thank you so much for having us and for working on this project with us.
Our other theme music is rapidly bearing down on us. Marjorie Turnbull, thank you so much for being a part of it. Rabbi Jack Romberg, likewise. And we can't wait to hear the incredible performances coming up on the 25th of March. Ruby Diamond Concert Hall. Folks, thank you so much for coming in to Perspectives today. Produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee, Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls doing the technical tap dance today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, some exciting state and local resources being marshaled to help Alzheimer's patients and their caregivers, too. We'll get together and talk about it all next week right here on Perspective.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.